Can we now all agree as adults that fudge is repulsive? Look, I appreciate I am not an expert. As I have written before, I do not have a sweet tooth. I have an alcohol molar. But I have seen the same astonishing cake and candy-themed competition shows that you have. Chefs are making impossible beautiful things out of sugar. Candy floss clouds and fantasy cities of marzipan and cakes that look like Boba Fett helmets and massive double cheeseburgers and a giant shrimp cocktail. Okay, those last ones are weird and gross, but they prove that you can make sugar look like anything. No one is forcing you to make it look like fudge. I don't need to tell you what fudge looks like, but I will anyway. It looks like a dark, impacted colon blockage that a surgeon has to remove to save your life. Stop eating it. That is a passage from a hilarious book and touching book written by John Hodgman called Vacation Land, True Stories from Painful Beaches. I absolutely adore this book. And I think John Hodgman and I might have similar DNA because I think we have a similar personality. And I'm not saying that because I'm trying to butter up to him because he can't hear this. I don't know where John Hodgman ended up. I'd love to hear from him. But he hasn't written. So, love that book. Anyway, I don't know if that quote has anything to do with the things I want to talk about today, but, I was just thinking about how I've never been a fan of fudge myself. And before I read that book, it never had occurred to me that what fudge looked like. And it really wasn't a visual thing of why I didn't like fudge. I don't like fudge because it's too sweet and it makes me shiver. And I don't like food that like sends me like tremors through my body because it's so sugary. I prefer things that have some sort of savory element mixed in with sugar, like chicken and waffles or something really nutty. I actually have a recipe to share with you guys, which I will do at the end of the podcast in the What's Happening in the Cabinin segment that I know everyone is such a huge fan of. Anyway, let's go to my favorite memory from America One for this week. And I've been thinking of some of the things I miss the most living out here in the cabin. And one of the things I miss the most is a good old-fashioned car chase. You don't get to see car chases anymore in America, too, especially if you're living alone. You don't really, I don't have TV, so I can't watch live news broadcasts of car chases, which when I lived in Los Angeles, when I first moved to Los Angeles, I had no idea that I was moving to the car chase capital of the world. If you've lived anywhere else, you know, maybe occasionally you'd see a car chase, but in LA, there's one, no joke, three times a week, if not every single day. And I don't know if that's because they just know that Los Angelinos had like a, you know, a real deep thirst to watch car chases, because once you get a taste of it, then you're really into it and you need to see it again. And so they would cover it and break into any programming live with any car chase happening in the greater Los Angeles area. I don't know if that's because there were so many cars in Los Angeles, or because something about the culture of Los Angeles, the heat, would make people crazy and think that they could escape from the police in a vehicle. And I loved car chases because they're, first of all, visually very entertaining. You know, the hands up. Give a hand. Let's everybody give a hand to the helicopter pilots who cover car chases. I mean, talk about excellent camera work. You know, we never for a moment lose sight of the car. They stay on that car. They are flying through the air. They're hovering. They're changing direction because car chases are unpredictable. But yet they stay on it. And I love that. And, you know, they're dealing with potential police choppers. And I've come to find that they actually would start to refer to them as airships. They'd be like, oh, there's a police airship joining us, so we need to back off a little to give them space. You know, they would say things like airship, which I found hilarious. So there's all the visual element of a car chase. There's the excitement of live TV, you know, which, of course, as we know, at one point they had to start putting a delay on car chases because there was a point at which some guy got out of his car after a car chase and literally shot himself in the head on live TV. And then they were like, huh, maybe sometimes things go wrong during a car chase. You know, it's like, who knew that somebody who would try to escape the police in a car might be the type of person that would jump out of the car and kill himself on live TV? So obviously that was horrific. And I've seen like a screen grab of the moment right before he does it, which was disturbing enough to see. But I can't imagine if I'd been watching that live and seeing that. I did not sign up for that. Okay. So I appreciated the 5-second delay that they soon started applying on car chases. So there's all of that, you know, what's going to happen, the thrill of the chase, you know, all those things, real life, you know, action movie type stuff. But there's a deeper thing. There's a deeper thing of why I love car chases, and that is the psychological aspect of it. Every time I saw a car chase, the first question that would come to my mind was, here I am on my couch in Los Angeles, California, watching a car chase on TV, watching somebody who, whether they stole the car, whether they, you know, the police pulled up behind them to pull them over for failure to signal or some other, you know, minor traffic violation. And they were like, fuck this, I've got stuff in the car I don't want them to see, or fuck this, I'm on the lam, whatever it is. And then they take off and they don't actually pull over. Whatever the reason that started the car chase, we're all now watching, okay? We've got news airships, we've got military grade police airships on the scene chasing the chase. We've got police cars on the ground. But the main thing is, if I'm at home watching you try to evade the police in a car, what makes you think you're going to get away? Okay. At what point do you think in your head, this is going to work out well for me? And as somebody who has watched many, many car chases, I can tell you they always end with the person being apprehended. I have never seen a car chase in which somebody got away. Because we can all see you, dude. We're right on your ass, you know? I am enjoying watching you just continue down a downward spiral of points of diminishing returns, you know? And it's crazy. That's the part that I don't get. I'm like, what's happening in the car? Are they making phone calls to try and arrange things, get some messages out before they head back to jail? Is it that type of thing? They're trying to buy some time before they're taken into custody. Are they high out of their minds and they have some crazy idea in their head? What is the deal in your head if you're trying to escape? Now, do you not know you're on TV? Well, then you must not be from LA, because if you're from LA, you know that if you're in a car chase, we're on it. You know, Chopper 4 is going to be there on your ass almost instantaneously, and we're all going to be watching it go down. So that's the part of it that I always find interesting. I always thought, what is the scenario in which you could escape in a car chase? So there's two possibilities that I've come up with. One is you ditch the car at a point where where you're in dense residential area. And I've actually seen this happen. You ditch the car and then you run into residential area and you try to escape that way. You maybe hide for a while, hope everybody goes away, and then you sneak out. You hide in a shed, you break into a house, whatever it is. Now you're no longer being seen by us, the viewers at home, and it's up to the cops to find you. Now, the thing is, that always ends too, because we know that you're in one of these, you know, this one city block. We know you're there. The cops are going to go door to door at this point, and they're going to find you. Unless you have some secret tunnel system that you have prearranged for that goes underneath all this stuff, or you have somebody that, you know, is helping you in this residential area, maybe dyeing your hair very quickly, putting you on, you know, maybe shaving your head, putting you in a wig, getting you into a disguise, and then you come out as somebody else, and then you get into a car and you drive away as if you live there. Maybe, I could see that maybe working, but a lot would have to go correctly, and it would have to happen very quickly for that to work out. So chances are that's a slim way of getting away. The other way to get away in a televised car chase would be to get into a tunnel. You know, there's a few tunnels or underpass, longer underpass. It can't just be a quick underpass. It has to be a full tunnel or, you know, somewhere where you are no longer in view of the cop, of the choppers. Because as we know in car chases, the cops will stay fairly far behind because they're, you know, they don't want to. This is one thing I didn't realize about car chases is that the cops will actually go kind of slow because they don't want to increase the speed because that increases danger, increases chances of accidents. So they don't want to increase the speed. So they'll take it kind of slow so that you will, you as the escapee, the car being chased, you will be kind of like, okay, I can go 35 miles an hour. These guys aren't on my ass. You know, it sort of just de-escalates the situation. So if you could get into a tunnel and then very quickly ditch your car and then steal another car, carjack another car, and without the police that are behind you somehow seeing this, now the chances of that are slim because they're going to pull right up on you. But if you've somehow lost them, I've seen a few instances where you do some crazy turns, you could potentially lose them just for a minute, then you switch cars. Now that would be a chance too. And then you make your way to the Mexico border. That is a strategy. Now, I never in my day thought that I would see that happen. Never did. And, you know, actually right now, real quick, I just want to give a quick rundown of my favorite car chases that I remember. I'm telling you, I'm very serious about car chases. And I have to replay them in my head now because I don't have the luxury of seeing them in person anymore. There was one that... It was one of the first ones I saw when I moved to LA, and I was like, oh, I'm in a new city. This is a whole new level. Holy shit. I don't know what it was about New York City that they didn't have car chases, probably because it was just too gridlocked. You couldn't get away, you know. But your best bet was just to get into the subway system and ride on out of town. That was a much easier way of escaping. But in LA, you know, there's a lot of open road, a lot of high speed, and there's a lot of excitement. So the first one I saw, this guy... was literally, I mean, the chase was going on for quite some time. And then at some point, he decided to escalate the situation. He starts waving a gun out of the side of the car. And you're like, oh, shit, this is getting real. So he does the residential thing, and he tries to ditch the car. He's running. He gets into some residential area, and somehow he gets up on a roof. And he's just sitting up there with a rifle. He's just like waiting. I don't know what he's doing, but he's just sitting there. And he's just kind of like, yeah, come get me. Whatever, dudes. Like, that one was good because I really was like, oh, wow, this is LA. Like, this is some real shit. And they apprehended him safely. And at one point, the news chopper had to cut away because I guess the police were like, you're kind of potentially fucking this up, so you need to get away. But anyway, they got him. And that was interesting. I was like, oh, these are crazy. These are very high stakes. Another one that I saw that was very memorable was a very slow speed chase. It was a guy in a convertible, and there was like, he must have had some, I don't know who this guy was. He wanted to be on TV, clearly. He planned this. I don't know where the car came from. I don't know why he was being chased. But he was going really slow through, like, Ventura. And he was on city streets, like, stoplights, coming to full stop at intersections, waving at everyone, pumping his fist in the air, thumbs up to everybody around. He was having the fucking time of his life. And it was so funny watching this guy. I don't know what he was doing. I don't know. There was like stuff painted on the side of his car. I don't know if he was like trying to get a message across. Like maybe he had some sort of campaign he was trying to do. But he was being chased. I mean, now, first of all, very entertaining for me. But I'm thinking like the level of resources that it takes to like do a car chase for the police. Like, you are wasting so much money and time. You're causing major traffic problems. You're potentially damaging people. You know, I've seen accidents happen lots of times during car chases, like full-on sideswiping, flipping cars. I mean, you know, that's the part that isn't funny or entertaining about this is if anybody gets hurt. Generally, though, nobody gets hurt in car chases, miraculously. That's the part that I'm like, okay, I don't feel so guilty about loving this so much. Anyway, this guy was going so slow. He was like being polite, you know, like, oh, like, no, you go ahead, sir. And I'm thinking, why aren't the police just
pulling up in front of him and blocking the car. He's literally going like 5 miles an hour. I mean, I don't know if they thought, of course, they're like, does he have a gun? We don't want to provoke him. We don't want to cause any danger. I know that they have all these policies in place, but there's a point where you're watching it where you're like, when are they going to just stop this guy? He's causing so many problems. Now there's people, because now people have like turned on their TV and they know what street he's on. They know where he's going. And there's people lining up on the sidewalks waiting for him. Like, it's a fucking parade, and they've got their cell phones out and they're all waving, and it's like, hey, yay, slow speed car chase. This guy's nuts. He's like doing peace signs in the air. He's honking his horn. He's having a great fucking time. Well, at one point there was a guy who was like, I've fucking had it with this car chase. Fuck this joker. He is loose upon society. He is not helping. And so a guy, our civilian, runs out in front of the car. Because, again, very slow speed. He runs out in front of the car, and he's just like, stop it! Like, he's doing that body language. You can't hear him because we're watching this from the helicopter, obviously. But he's just like, no! And he goes up to the hood, and he just slams the hood. And he's like, no! We're done with this! You know, you are no longer in a car chase. Well, then the police get out of their cars and they run up and they body slam the civilian. They're like, they body slam him to the ground. They're like, you cannot get involved in this. This is our fun. This is our game, and that's our villain that we're going to get. No, you don't get to help. So they threw him down. Well, and then, of course, they get the driver out. They pull him out of the car and they arrest him. So in a way, the civilian did stop this ridiculous car chase that had been going on. I mean, I'll admit, sometimes when there's a car chase, they'd be like, okay, we've been rolling for too long on this. We have to get back to our regular programming. And I would be so upset that I would go. And they'd be like, but you can watch it streaming on our website. Well, I would go to the website. I needed to see how it ended. I needed resolution. So anyway, that was one of my favorites. That was so memorable. What a fun time that one was. Nobody got hurt. A lot of money was wasted, though. But you know what? I'm a taxpayer, and I'm okay with my taxes going to that. Another one that I loved was, it was your typical car chase. Finally, they gave up. They pulled over. You know, one of the strategies that the police would use was they would put out these. They would do pit maneuvers, which were where they would kind of like try to, if it was slow enough, they would actually get their car in front of you and force you to crash into a police car. That was one thing I used to see them do. They would also put down these strips of spikes, you know, spike strip, and actually pop your tire so that eventually your tire would go out. And, you know, you can go pretty far. I've noticed just from watching those that you could go pretty far on a flat tire, but eventually your whole wheel starts to, like, you know, the whole tire's blown out, and then you're sparking and smoking, and then, you know, eventually the car just stops. Or in some cases flips. Like, you really, if I was ever in a car chase, once I knew the tire was going flat, I would just pull over, because once you have one tire that's compromised and you're down to the nub, you're in danger of flipping your car, which I have seen. Miraculously, again, have never seen a car chase where someone was injured that I know of. Now, another one I loved was typical car chase. They come to the end, and it's a couple that were in the car, and they come out with their arms up, but the guy comes over to the woman, and he grabs her, and he tries to kiss her. And you can tell she's like, kind of like, no. She's like trying to put her, she's like, don't do this. Like, they have guns pointed at him. You know, she's like, now is not the time for a makeout sesh, honey. We're getting arrested. But I guess he was wasted, and he was just like, honey, we got to kiss. We're going to be separated soon. You know, I love you so much, honey. I would die for you. That's what I'm imagining happening in their heads. But that was an interesting end to one of them. Another one, this is sort of mundane, but it was a lesson in that if you don't know the streets, you really should be careful in a car chase. If you don't know those roads, you got to know what you're doing. Maybe stick to the highways that you're used to, okay? Don't go chasing side streets. Please stick to the highways and freeways that you're used to. Now, because I saw a guy get off on side streets, he makes a left turn. Boom. He's in a cul-de-sac. Game over, bitch. And he pulled up in the cul-de-sac, and he just got out of the car and put his hands up. He kind of shook his head. He was like, fuck. It's like, that's the thing. You know, it always ends with you being arrested. So, you know, at some point you got to ask, why did you even try to drive away? Finally, there was one that truly was special in that it was an 18-wheeler. Very rare to see an 18-wheeler on the run from the police. So there was one, and it was going on for hours. I mean, like, it was just going into another state at this point. Like, they were like, we don't even know if this truck has been stolen. Like, it was just so boring that finally and what was hilarious about it is they kept cutting back to the news anchors, and this woman, her face, you could just tell she was so fucking sick of sitting there. Like, her shift had ended like 2 hours earlier, and she was just like, and we're still following this car chase. Pete, is there anything you can tell us about the driver? You know, and she just was so fucking sick of it. She was like, I'm fucking done. I have to pee. I'm hungry. And at one point, like, her facial expression was so hilarious. I took pictures of it because she was just like, are you fucking serious? Like, we're just watching an 18-wheeler go down the highway. We're like watching, it's like watching a Walmart truck deliver goods. Like, why is that interesting? And finally, they cut back at one point to the anchors, and she was gone. And there was another person sitting there. It was another woman. And they were like, Alicia has gone home for the day, and now we have Eliana here. Eliana, yes, we're following this live. You know, it's just like, you can just tell how fucking bored they were. Anyway, I was in on it. I was like, yo, you keep following this, because that's the thing about a car chase. At any point, it can become incredible, and you don't know when something crazy is going to happen. Now, as a car chase enthusiast, it played out in my real life two times in America One. In 2017, I had the great honor of writing on a comedy special for Ed Helms. It was called The Fake News with Ted Nelms, and it was like a full hour of a parody, basically, of a cable news show hosted by Ed Helms, playing his alter ego, Ted Nelms. And it was so fun. And we wrote this, you know, completely fantastical news hour. And I mean, it was three writers plus a head writer. And then, of course, Ed also wrote on it as well. So it was a small room. And we wrote this thing in like 3 weeks. And it was crazy. We worked really hard. I mean, we wrote hundreds of pages of material that had to be like whittled down to like 70 pages. And one of the sketches I wrote that never made it into the final piece because they just had to cut so much, I wrote a car chase scene that Ed was going to, you know, report on. And what the conceit was is that and, you know, I say I wrote it. I did write it, but as a group, we came up with some of the ideas. So forgive me if any of the fellow writers are listening to this and some of these ideas might have been technically yours, but I was the writer on it, so I'm going to take credit for the whole thing. Anyway, the conceit was that the helicopter pilot, you know, reporting, you know, you can just hear his voice. It turns out he's actually just using the chopper to follow a woman that rejected him. and it's like, you know, so at first it's like, so Ted, we're following, we believe the driver is a, 34-year-old female, brunette, great girl. You know, not sure why she wouldn't, you know, I can't remember the exact phrases of it now, but it was basically, you realize that this chopper guy is like stalking this woman, and he like cuts back to Ed, and he's like, okay, so we're just gonna check back in later and probably contact the authorities. So he kind of says, he does a great little, like, you know, we're not like making light of sexual predatory behavior, but it was really funny, and I enjoyed being a part of that. But it didn't make it to the final cut. But I got to bring in a lot of my knowledge about car chases to that sketch. So maybe one day it'll see the light of day. Who knows? maybe America 3 will come around and me and Ed Helms will, you know, become a writing duo and just produce all the things we want to produce. And you never know. You never know. The other car chase that I'd like to mention, I know I've been talking about car chases for quite some time now. So, oh well, deal with it. No one. The other one I have to mention was, it was one of the highlights of my life. Was driving southbound on the 101, and my boyfriend and I noticed there were no cars on the other side of the highway. And we thought, what could it be? Why would the highway have no cars on it at this time of day? And Scott goes, oh my God, baby. Oh, it's happening. It's happening. It's coming. And I look over. It was a car chase. I saw a car chase in real life on the road, not on TV, with my own eyeballs. I absorbed a car chase and they came by and I was just like, yes, yes. It's like, go, go, go. It's incredible. Oh, wait, I do have to mention one more car chase. I know I've mentioned a lot here today. And this goes back to the psychology of it. So remember when I said, you know, the only way to really escape would be to drive into a tunnel and then somehow ditch the car and get into a different car or something like that. I am not exaggerating when I say I saw a car chase at one point where the man was driving a pickup truck. We don't know. I'm pretty sure they had identified it as a man. There was talk later that perhaps there was a female passenger in the car as well. But it was nighttime, so you couldn't really see who was in the car. Lots of side streets. At one point, he T-boned a taxi cab at slow speed, so I don't think anyone was hurt. But it was a really crazy chase. Had all the elements, checking off all the whole list of, like, this is a great car chase. It's got all the pieces. And then this guy drove the pickup truck onto train tracks, okay? Like light rail, Los Angeles light rail, and drove into a train tunnel. And then we lost the car. We couldn't see it anymore. And we don't know what happened, but 20 minutes later, a train came out of that tunnel the other way. So we have no idea where this fucking truck went. Was there room in the tunnel for him to get out of the way? Well, the train didn't like push the car out. So did he come out the other end? I don't know. Did he just ditch the car? I don't know. But it was incredible. This man went all the fucking way. He was a great driver. Other than the T-boning part, we were leading up to this point. We're like, this guy's a really good driver. He has great control of the vehicle. He even had like a fucked up, after he hit the taxi cab, the front of the car was fucked up and it was like a piece of metal was dragging and it might have been puncturing the tire a little. He still had great control of the vehicle. He drove the fucking truck into a train tunnel. And then he disappeared. I mean, you guys. Now, unfortunately, I did check the news the next day, and they did apprehend him. But they said they were looking for the woman still. So potentially the woman got away, or she's dead somewhere. So great, 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 great experience. I don't know why I'm rooting for the criminal at that point, but I'm like, dude, if you went all the way and you drove straight into a train tunnel, risking your life on that way, maybe you deserve a little bit of a break from society. As one loner to another, maybe you were just trying to get away. Isn't that what we're all doing? Just trying to escape whatever demons are chasing us. And we know the end is coming. We know death will be upon us at some point. There's no way to escape it. But here we are running from it, trying to outlast it, trying to be young, trying to avoid cancer, trying to make our faces look really smooth, our foreheads really smooth. But yet death will come for all of us. It always does. Unless you're Jesus, of course. In which case, you get to come back to life 3 days after the fact and be like, bitch, you think you could kill me? I'm literally God. And that's my thoughts on car chases. I think the metaphor that I made at the end was actually brilliant. So maybe I should include that in my next book. Of course, the epilogue to all of this is that car chases completely changed after that time in America One, because pretty soon after that, right around, I mean, honestly, historians will probably say this had a huge part in the decay of America One, is that the driverless car took over. And what does a car chase look like with driverless cars? What does that even mean? Well, we found out. People could hack cars and drive them away, and then driverless police cars would follow the other car. It was just a fucking farce. And it kind of took away the joy of it, you know? It felt more like you were watching, you know, two teenagers play Mario Kart, you know, as opposed to actually watching the thrill of a human car chase. So it really changed. And of course, as we know, when the whole driverless car thing came about, you know, a huge portion of America's workforce was unable to work because trucks were now driving themselves, delivery trucks, Uber, they all those people lost their jobs, millions and millions of people. And that's when we had to instate, you know, there was just so much unemployment. It was to the point where it was like, well, how is anybody going to survive? And these were men. You know, the majority of driving jobs were taken by men. And so when men are suffering, you know, that's when we really have to do something. So that's when they passed the American Everyone is a Corporation Act. And we should have known back when people were saying, oh, corporations are people, that this would somehow come back to maybe bite them in the ass. You know, one of the things that back then that in America One that people would always argue about is, do we want to become a socialist country, or is socialism evil, or socialism good? Is capitalism working? Should we get rid of it? You know, and there was a huge argument over all that stuff. And one of the tenets of socialism, at least in some countries, the concept of universal basic income was introduced. I can tell you one thing, conservatives flipped their fucking shit at that idea. They didn't want the government to help pay for somebody's birth control pills, much less someone's entire existence. You know, they were pro-life, but once you were born, fuck you. You better start working the day you get out of the womb, you little piece of shit. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you dumb fuck. Make it on your own. Meanwhile, you're not making it on your own. You've got lots of things, you know, helping you along the way, and different people were given different advantages. So what we ended up doing is we tricked the conservatives by saying everyone is now a corporation. Okay, so, you know, Felix Smith from Oklahoma, who used to drive a UPS truck, is now a corporation. The Felix Smith Corporation now qualifies for government benefits. Because there's something that we love as Americans, there's nothing we love more as Americans than giving corporations money and giving them welfare. And so we kind of did a little workaround and we said, okay, everyone gets some basic universal income. You just get money because you live here. And even if you can't work, you're going to get a little bit of money from the government. You know, it's not going to be a great life, but it's enough to keep you alive. Nobody's going to suffer. It's not amazing. You're not rich, but you're just going to be able to survive on this little bit of amount of money, and we're going to give it to you, the corporation. So, great workaround, if you ask me, and you have to give it up for TWAMT-90A for helping write that bill. I'm referencing something that happened in the last episode, in case you're skipping around. Anyway, moving on. I want to talk about Donald Trump a little bit. You know, at the time when he was first elected, you know, a lot of us were like, holy shit, how is this going to end? And of course, we all know how it ended. But one of the things about Trump that I always look back on and I'm like, wow, it was really strange, was how Trump was sort of this piece of all of us. He represented something. There were times with Donald Trump that I looked at him and I would go, I relate to this person. I see myself in him and I see him in me. And I don't like it, but I'm empathizing with him. Now, I think I might have been in the minority on that, but there were moments where I could see his base humanity, his weakness and his flaws were out on display. And we all had those parts of ourselves. Now, the question was, should someone like that be president? Fuck no. But you can't say that there are parts of Donald Trump that aren't in you. And I always said that. You know, I would have moments where I would be like, I would do something and I would go, ugh, that's so Trump-like. Ugh. Like those parts of yourself, like, you know, for instance, like I had this really long story in my stand-up act in 2018-17 for a few years there. Obviously, it ended up becoming, you know, one of my most famous bits after I did several Netflix specials. Is that I did a long story about shopping in a Hobby Lobby and how that was a moral quandary for me as a liberal feminist wanting to go into a Hobby Lobby, which you know, was one of the most extravagant wonderlands of crafting you could ever find. And I'd never been in one, and I was like, I should go in there, at least know what my, you know my enemy, right? I won't tell the whole story, but because that's, you know, that you need to experience my stand-up to fully experience that story. But the story is around the idea that, you know, ideologically I should have been boycotting Hobby Lobby, but I really wanted to be inside of a Hobby Lobby, and I saw something in there that I really needed, and I needed is a questionable word in this case. It was a little basket that I wanted for my craft nook to put stuff in. You know, I really needed it. But anyway, it was a moral quandary of how should I be shopping there, and on my principles, am I a hypocrite for shopping in there? And part of that story, there was a part where, you know, I go in there and I'm like, I'm not going to buy anything in here. Fuck Hobby Lobby. And just so you know, the reason I would say fuck Hobby Lobby is because Hobby Lobby lobbied, if you will. They went all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States to fight for what they believed to be their right to refuse to cover certain types of birth control for their employees because they believed it was literally abortion. And, you know, there's a lot of arguments. It's a really complicated issue. I don't need to go down that rabbit hole, but in my opinion, Hobby Lobby set a dangerous precedent for corporations to go. It's against, you know, corporations, again, as we know, they're people. So it was against their religious beliefs to sell this, to cover this type of birth control. And like, then that kind of opens it up. Well, it's against my religion to employ black people. It's against my religion. You know, it sort of opens up a door to some discriminatory, potentially very discriminatory hiring practices. And as we know in law and in the Supreme Court, that once the Supreme Court rules on something, that is what is used by other, you know, anyway, it's changing the law to fit your needs. And I had a problem with that. So regardless of what you believe, should I be shopping in a Hobby Lobby? No. So anyway, the whole joke was about how I shopped in there. As part of the joke, I would say, you know, I once I realized what I had done after leaving the store with the purchase, you know, I go, it's my fault. I'm the reason Trump got elected because I didn't stand up for my, you know, because one of the reasons that people would say Trump got elected is because too many people didn't stand up for their own beliefs. You know, they let this guy through because one, they were either tribal to the Republican Party, and they just wanted a Republican in there. They didn't care who it was, just get him in there. Or on the other side of things, you know, maybe you didn't vote for Hillary because you didn't agree with every single thing that she ever did, so that you stuck in your beliefs and you either didn't vote or you voted for Jill Stein or Bernie, you know, one of those things. So there was all these arguments about, should you compromise your beliefs? And is this how we get presidents like Donald Trump, blah, blah, blah. So the whole joke was about that. And in that joke, I talk about how I'm Trump. I go, I'm Trump. I didn't last 2 seconds. My moral, and as we knew, Trump didn't have any moral, like, convictions. He would just change his mind. He'd be like, one day he'd be like, no trans people in the military. And the next he'd be like, I love trans people. Sure. You know, like he would just do whatever needed to serve his own needs in the moment. to attain more power, to avoid embarrassment, whatever the thing he needed to do, he just did it. Now, at that time, I started to think, like, it's interesting that I relate to Trump in that moment. I see it's human behavior. He's sort of like this, he was just like this worst version of all of us, you know? And I started to think, like, the word Trump became, you know, the old Freud, like, Freud used to have my old friend Freud, Sigmund Freud, you know, that old dude. Ha! Anyway, Freud had the whole, like, breakdown of the human psyche of being id, ego, and superego. So id is, like, your basic instincts, like, your animal wants, your basic needs. And ego is the functioning, high-functioning part of your brain that tries to satisfy the id's needs, but in a realistic way that doesn't end up harming the id in the long run. So, like, the more sort of more the adult, practical part that's, but its main goal is to meet the basic human needs of the id, but in a way that's mature. I'm definitely oversimplifying complicated psychoanalysis right here, but superego is the internalization of all the cultural norms and your parents and all the no, you're a bad person, you shouldn't do this. The inner critic is sort of like what that ended up evolving into, psychologically speaking. Like, superego is the judging voice. You're bad, you're wrong for wanting that id. Your ego, you shouldn't be trying to meet those needs, those basic desires. So that was sort of like a very influential thing in psychoanalysis. And I thought, you know, as being a expert in human psyche as well, I thought, why don't we add a new one? Id, ego, superego, and Trump. So Trump is the part of you that it's, and I guess some people would say Trump is id, but there's something, there's another layer of Trump where Trump is a sort of unfiltered, it's like ego, but with no filter or practicality or reality. Trump is the part of you, I guess the best way to explain, it's hard for me to explain this, but Trump, the Trump part of your psyche is the part of you that if someone says to you, hey, you have a little bit of food on your face, and instead of wiping it off and going, oh, thank you, you'd go, no, I don't have food on my face. You have food on your face. Yeah. In fact, you have so much food on your face that it's hilarious. And I can't believe you're accusing me of something when, in fact, you're the one with the food on your face. That's Trump. It's the part of you that wants to deflect all blame onto somebody else and go, no, you're the one that did that. And that's what Trump would always do. Trump is also the part of you that thinks that you can do things that you clearly can't, like be president. Trump is the part of you that is racist. Trump is the part of you that hates women. Trump is the part of you that views women as just holes for you to grab onto. And that's sad. That's really sad. And in a way, I empathize because I have Trump in me. That's a terrible thing to say. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. Trump is not in me. Ew. Cast it out. That's my superego talking. Anyway, it's just something to think about. You know, when I saw the footage of Trump's, sometimes I would just see footage of him or read something he wrote, and I would just feel so sad for this person. Like, what the fuck did your parents do to you to make you this fucking pathetic? And just so, like, I guess the way I would describe it would be, what deficit did his parents create in him to create such a vast black hole of need that the whole world was being sucked in, like a black hole? Like, we were all past, at that point, at the end of America One, we had passed the event horizon of Trump's ego, and we were all just being sucked into it. One man's self-hatred and just fucked up personality, one man's lack of love, whatever that emptiness in him that couldn't be filled, was sucking us all in. The whole world. It affected everyone. One fucked up dude. Man, that is insane to think about. Well, anyway, as I said, we all know what happened. guys, that was a really intense conversation, and I just want to end, as promised, on what's happening in the cabin with a recipe. Share a little recipe at the end of the episode just to kind of give you guys something to chew on, literally. So I discovered this little recipe that I made, in that I'm making a real effort in the cabin to eat everything I have and be way more self-sufficient. Of course, you have to be because of the way the drone system works. You know, you really have to make your food last. And, you know, I'm working with, you know, the fresh ingredients that you get through Drone Mall. They're not the freshest, you know, when you're living alone and you can't go to a market. So I try to grow what I can. And then if I need to supplement with canned goods and things like that from Drone Mall, I do. But I try to go through the food that I have because I was realizing I was still, even then, living alone on Coy Wolf Creek, still being a wasteful person. So really trying to work on less waste. And so I had this big bag of dried apricots and I had a whole bunch of pecans. And I don't care if you don't pronounce it pecan and you say pecan, like some sort of prince. I say pecan. You can go say pecan in the fucking Louvre, bitch. Anyway, got some apricots and some pecans. And all you do is you throw that in your food processor with two eggs and pulse that shit. Pulse it up. It turns into a ball. And then you mix in some chocolate chips if you have them. They're optional. I personally love it with the chocolate chip. And then you bake that for like 30 minutes at 350. And what comes out is like your own little energy bar that is so delicious. Simple ingredients, 3 to 4 ingredients, pure whole foods. Delicious, packed with protein. Can't recommend it enough. No artificial sugar in there. None of that bullshit. Just delicious naturalness. And I highly recommend this recipe. Now, what I will say, you're probably wondering, where do you get your eggs? I'll tell you, and this is the last thing I'll leave you guys on for this episode. I do raise chickens. I haven't mentioned them yet because, you know, who cares? But I do have chickens. I mean, by the end of America 1, you know, if you were a white lady, hipster, and you didn't have your own chickens, it was like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, it doesn't matter that you live in a city. You can be an urban farmer. Get yourself some fucking chickens. So anyway, I finally was able to enact that fantasy. And of course, I have plenty of room for chickens here. I do have to kind of protect them. I have, you know, they live in a little habitat that I made with wiring because, as you know, coy wolves are abound. So anyway, I have a few chickens, and I gave them all names of some of my favorite comedians from America 1. So I've got one little chicken named Rory Scovel. Love Rory Scovel. Now, these are all female chickens. I have like I can't deal with roosters. They're too much problem. But got a Roy Scovel. These are all female chickens, so I apologize to any of the male comedians that are being given female bodies, chicken bodies. But Roy Scovel, I love Roy Scovel. And I do try to name them based on their personality to match the comedian. So Roy Scovel the chicken is just like Roy Scovel the comedian. Really great on her feet. You know, every time you see her just like sort of pecking around, eating her feed, she just always, you're always like, is she making that up on the spot or is that like practiced? Like, she just seems so effortless, just like Rory Scovel was with his comedy. Very inventive and creative. Also, I have another chicken named Kyle Mazzono, which, if you don't know, Kyle Mazzono was this comedian who, holy shit, so funny. And Kyle Mazzono the chicken reminds me of Kyle Mazzono the comedian because she just sort of like, she's real quiet and shy at first, like when she comes out of the little coop in the morning and she's just kind of like, burr, 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 burr. But then suddenly she'll be like, like, and she'll just get this huge energy burst and it's so funny and unexpected. And so that's why I love her. I'll just feature those two for now. I did have a chicken named Dave Chappelle for a little while. Always loved Dave Chappelle, hugely influential. Even though sometimes Dave Chappelle said shit, said shit that offended me. Like, for instance, there was a special that he put out where in which in 2018, in which, you know, and he even said, I know a lot of this shit that I'm saying is wrong, which I admit that. And I know that I'm glad that he did that. You know, he had the luxury in his specials because of the legend that he is to sort of like get up there with some raw material that really wasn't thought through. Other comedians that are younger would never be allowed to just shoot, you know, an hour of you riffing for a Netflix special. So anyway, Dave Chappelle was at that level and we gave him that permission to do that. We trust him. That's part of being a great comedian is that you have to build enough trust with your audience that you can say things that are fucked up. And younger comedians, it's a big risk to go up there and just say something that could be perceived as super offensive because we don't know you and we don't trust you yet that we're in good hands. So anyway, Dave Chappelle, he said some shit that really bothered a lot of people, which was he talked about some of the Louis C.K. victims that came forward. In particular, he talked about one that had said that that Louis C.K. had been inappropriate with her on a phone call, that he had jerked off on a phone call with her, and she didn't hang up, she froze, and she described the experience, and it made her quit comedy. That was her story. And Dave Chappelle mocked her in his special and said that she was weak. He used the word weak, and he said, you know, the comedy business is really hard, and if a simple phone call is going to make you quit, I'm sorry, but you're weak. Look, I'm sure that he meant well, and I'm not defending Dave Chappelle's comments here because it really did piss me off when he said it. It's like, why bring that up? That's like a real person in your special that's going on Netflix that you're fucking mocking and saying is weak. And by the way, and I know I probably shouldn't say this, but by the way, last I checked, Dave Chappelle also quit comedy. For what reason? Being too rich? Getting too much success? I actually remember him describing it in a stand-up set in which he said, here's why I walked away from my show. Here's why I quit comedy. This is years before this special that I'm referring to. I saw a set where it was on video, so I don't know if it was a special or it was, I don't know what it was from, but I saw him doing it. I'll never forget it because it was really funny. He said, people always ask me why I walked away. Here's why I walked away. And he said, imagine $20 million. And he like points to the stool. And he's like, and it's right there in front of you. And it's yours. Now imagine a white man's dick on it. And he takes the microphone and he lands it in a really funny way. He just like plops it on top of the money. And his metaphor was that you can have this money, but you pretend maybe you have to suck this white dude's dick metaphorically to get it. Isn't that ironic? Isn't that ironic that years later, Dave Chappelle is mocking a woman for quitting comedy for an actual dick being in her way? I mean, like literally a man took out his dick and jerked off. Whether it was in front of her or on the phone, it doesn't fucking matter. But a real dick got in her way and it made her quit comedy. But a metaphorical dick made him quit comedy. So who's weaker? Huh? Shit. I got so mad I knocked over a glass that had just a little bit of tea in it. And I'm just going to let it absorb into the table as a reminder of my awesome opinions about Dave Chappelle. Look, again, love Dave Chappelle. And it's not enough for me to be like, Dave Chappelle is over. You know, that wasn't enough for me because I also watched his other special because he put out two at the same time. And he made such amazing points about, and he even said, he goes, everything is funny until it happens to you. And so even he would admit that phone call with Louis C.K. didn't happen to him. So he can't speak to it. So anyway, sometimes comedians say stupid shit. And it's not the only stupid thing that Dave Chappelle has said. He's been homophobic, transphobic before. And he has some blind spots. And that's just the way it is. And I wish I had been friends with him so I could have had some conversations with him. I don't know how they would have gone. I'm sure he probably would have been like, who the fuck are you? Get away from me. Anyway, I had a chicken named Dave Chappelle, but she died. Bye.